recent book is Over Enchanted, and I just wanted to say, it is a companion to Ella Enchanted, and they are for sale outside. She'll be signing afterwards. But please join me in welcoming Gail Carson Levine.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you for coming. So we're going to write. You know this. I hope you know this. If you don't know this, you know it now. So, Susan Vincent, would you pass out the...
Yep, certainly.
So there are folders, so if you don't have pens, if you need a pencil, we're covered. And we're going to do that for about 15 minutes. And adults are invited to write too.
You're the prop.
So take a minute and look at your three choices. And you can change anything. Does anybody have any questions now? same as maniacs. I'm hoping that somebody will be willing to read what he wrote. And so I would like a volunteer. Yes? Okay. Before you do that, let's talk for a second. What I would like everybody to do, what you need to do as the reader, is to read really loud. Can you do that really loudly? Okay, cool. Now, as listeners, it is very helpful to take notes, because if you don't, you may forget what you heard. So, when you are listening, what might you be listening for? Yeah. Okay, what else? might have gotten confused, or where your mind might have wandered a little bit. Those are helpful to know, for the writer to know. So those are some things to keep in mind, where the excitement is, what you like, where you may not have understood. And so, and your job is to read very loudly, and I think the best way to do that is maybe to come and stand on the front. Okay? Cool. Thank you. What's your name?
Maida.
Maida. Okay, go for it. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I wish I could do that. anybody wrote, but get ready to write, because it's useful. What's your name?
I'm Sarah. Being a table is hard work, especially with the Clements. The baby of the family, Fifi, manages to spit on me in a new creative way every single day. That's right. I am almost always covered with baby snacks, applesauce, or a mysterious spit that seems to consist of various different things. One particular night, Jamie, the older sister, had tired of cleaning up her little sister's messes and decided to create a petition. "Mom, Dad," she said, placing her hands neatly on my surface. "Yes," looking up from a phone, Jamie's dad, Andrew, bored his eyes into Jamie's bright red hair. Jamie cleared her throat. "Well, I wonder if you could hear me out and sign my petition about Fifi's spittles," she said. Andrew returned his eyes to his phone. "I wonder as well," he murmured. Jamie sighed. She never got enough attention from her parents. At least to me it seemed that way. Next she tried her mother, who was named Clara. "Mom?" she asked. "Hello?" Clara nodded while holding Fifi, who was having one of her tantrums. "Honey, what is it? You know I'm busy enough with Fifi, and please don't make her yell more," she said over the screams. Jamie despairingly nodded, though she didn't understand. I didn't either, and that says a lot, because everyone knows that tables are very large. Apparently, Jamie wasn't feeling too good, and she did something that I had never seen her do before. She yelled. She screamed, even, at the top of her lungs at her parents.
Okay, comments? Yes?
I was kind of off the name of all the characters, so I wasn't like... The older sister got very mad and did something I never seen before. I could tell you the older sister's name.
Yeah, so names are good. Yes.
I like that how we use the ones to draw.
Yes.
And you interpret them and like said, Jamie had red hair. He said that the dad was looking at the red hair instead of saying she had red hair.
So that was a clever way of bringing it in and letting the reader know. Yes. Yes. Yeah, the table was well used in this. Yes.
I thought it was funny.
Me too. Anybody else? Yes?
I really liked how the table displayed the source of Jamie's frustration rather than hearing it from Jamie's perspective.
Yeah, like the specificity of spit. and the table has an opinion about how much attention. Is it Jamie or Jamie?
Jamie
gets from her mom. So the table, you know, kind of takes sides here. And that was fun. It's a lot of fun. And I love that the table, according to the table, tables are very wise. and then when Jamie yells, that's kind of an event. Well, we know that in 15 minutes, so I hope you'll continue. I wondered how it feels if and, you know, I don't know the capabilities of this table. So if the table can feel hot and cold, if the table likes certain sensations, doesn't like others, that might be fun, add to the fun. And that this is great. Okay, so, I'm going to move on. along, and I want to tell you that if you enjoy this, and it's not nearby, but just saying, I teach in the summers. I live in Brewster, New York, which on the train is about an hour and a half. And I do a writing workshop every Wednesday afternoon for 6 weeks, the kids 10 and up. And from the week after, the Wednesday following July 4th, for 6 weeks, whatever that works out to. And if you're interested, you need to call Brewster Public Library and put your name on the list. And you also need to be able to come at least 5 out of the 6 weeks. So it's just something to know that we do a lot of writing, we do a lot of critiquing, I give homework. And I edit like an editor. So if anybody's interested, one year I did get a high schooler from Illinois. So you would not be in her week. You came. If you would like to be in touch with me, you can write on my guest book on my website, which is gailcarsonmagazine.com. I am easily found. And if you would like to follow my blog, which is on my website, it is all about writing. So I thought I could read to you a little bit from my new book, Ogre Enchanted. How many of you have read Our Enchanted? Oh, cool, cool. How many of you have seen the movie? Okay. And this is a prequel. What is a prequel? Yes. That would be the sequel. That would be after. So what's the opposite of after? Before. So a prequel is before. Okay, so I'm going to read a little bit from the beginning of Ogre Enchantment. My mind emptied. The kitchen tiles no longer seemed to be beneath me. Somewhere, fabric ripped. My mind filled it. I held my arms out for balance and felt the floor under my feet. My mouth tasted gamey and spoiled, as if I'd swallowed a 3-day dead squirrel. Wormy's jaw was unhinged. He extended my name. Evie, there's hair on your face. Not what I expected to hear. I started to lift a hand to my cheek, but stopped and held the hand out. Hair sprouted there. My fingernails were long and filthy. My stomach rose into my throat. Evie, you're an ogre. I looked down at further horrors. My bodice had ripped, but my apron strings held and were squeezing my stomach. Hastily, I untied them. The seams of both sleeves of my bodice had split. The hem of my skirt, which had hovered just above the floor, now fell a little below my knees. I had shot up a whole foot. My boots, which were visible now without raising my skirts, had come apart. When I lifted one foot, the sole flapped. My stomach settled, though I didn't know how it could, and it rumbled, but I'd had a big breakfast. How delicious Wormy looked. A little lopsided because he always hiked up his left shoulder, which just added to his appeal. And those rounded cheeks, those plump earlobes, the sweetest part, that flawless neck, that skin, didn't do. And in that one, the beast is not a beast, it's an old lady. But the prince is horrified at the thought of marrying her. And for some reason, I didn't care for that. And anyway, in Beauty, there is something that has always bothered me about Beauty and the Beast, about the story. And is there anything that bothers you about that story? About the story of Beauty and the Beast. How many of you know the story just from Disney? Okay, a confessor. How many of you know, have read fairy tales from Grimm in there? Oh, cool, wow, great. Okay, so there has always been something, not always, as an adult, there has been something that bothered me about Beauty and the Beast. And the story is, and Grimm doesn't say, I think Disney does, but Grimm doesn't tell how the beast becomes a beast. He's just a beast. And he can only stop being a beast if somebody is willing to marry him. What is the problem? Beauty shows up. Here, what do you think? Well, that she has to marry him? He has to marry somebody, yes. Yes, that is seems to me like a big problem. Yeah, what about it? Yeah, well, she shows up, and yes. Yeah, like, she just shows up. She happens to be gorgeous. She happens to be very nice. He is never forced to face, what if she wasn't beautiful? I mean, that's not too terrible, but what if she wasn't nice? What if she was just awful? Or what if she was very nice and he didn't like her anyway? Which you have a right to do. Then he has to make a choice between staying beast forever or marrying, or persuading her to marry him, which she might do, because for what other reason might she marry him? Yeah.
Because he lives in a huge castle?
Yes, yes. He's apparently very wealthy. And he has all these servants. Yeah. So her motives might not be very pure. This marriage might not work out too well. He might wish she was a beast again. So that's a lot of what I was thinking about when I wrote this, was what kind of self-respect do you have when you're a beast and you don't have a lot of choices about what your fate is going to be. So, now I'm hoping you will have questions for me about writing, about my books, anything. Yes?
What was the first book that you wrote?
The first book I wrote was called The King's Cure. It was an art appreciation book for kids. I did pencil drawings of birds, and I used reproductions of famous artwork. It was about a bird who's very sick, the king of the birds, an eagle. And he's told by his physicians that he'll only get well if he sees something beautiful. And so he's brought to see all these beautiful works of art, but he doesn't see the beauty. And nobody would publish it. And they wouldn't publish it because the story was very simple. But I worked in discussion of art that was pretty advanced. And it didn't meet in the middle. So for the art, you would have had to be 12. And for the story, you would have had to be 6. So So then I started to learn about writing for kids and I took a class, and a classmate is in the back here, Sherry, and we were in a class together. I took other classes. I read books about writing. I read all the Newbery books in the library. And it took me 9 years to get a book published. And my first published book was Ella Enchanted. So for 9 years, every publisher, because I sent them out, every publisher in the known universe rejected my stories. Yes. Dave at Night is a historical novel. I have another historical novel coming out in the spring of 2020. And both of them were inspired by my father's life. Dave at Night takes place in 1926. And Dave lives in an orphanage. My father was an orphan and grew up in the Hebrew orphan asylum. And that had boys and girls in it. But I made it just boys to make it simpler. It's the Hebrew home for boys, which they have other names for, like the Hell House for boys. And it was, the real orphanage was very close to Harlem. Today it would be Harlem. And in the 1920s was the Harlem Renaissance. And so the boys slip out, not the boys, Dave slips out of the orphanage at night and has adventures in the Hebrew, in the Harlem Renaissance. And the orphanage was very difficult. The superintendent was horrible. And that was the case, that was the truth. But my father would not talk about his childhood. Anybody want to guess why he wouldn't talk about it? Yeah, what do you think?
Maybe it made him a little upset. Maybe it made him upset if he didn't want to look in the past.
I think that's true. I think my father had a very tough childhood. But he came out a very happy man. My father was the most joyous person I've ever known. So I wrote a book to understand after he died. He died when I was 38. And I wrote Dave at Night to understand how he turned out okay. And after you read it, do you think you understand that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And hearing that, you became more of a reader because of one of my books. That is the best compliment that a writer ever gets, a kid's book writer. If an adult says that, it gets a little bit. But, more questions. Susan Vincent.
Well, you mentioned you have a book coming out in 2020, so can you tell us anything more about it other than that it's historical?
My father was a Sephardic Jew. Does anybody know what that means, to be a Sephardic Jew? It means to be a Jew. Do you know that? You know?
It's a Jew from Asia.
There are Jews from Asia. But I don't think that they're considered Sephardic unless their ancestors came from Spain or Portugal. It's Jews whose ancestors came from Spain or Portugal, as my father's did. And in 1492, what happened in 1492? Yes. Yes. So I start this book with a poem. Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. You all know that. And in the selfsame year, it's true, Spain's king and queen expelled and my ancestors were among them. And so I wrote a book about a girl who is in a very prominent family, and she traveled, her grandfather loves her very much, and he takes her with him when he travels throughout Spain, and she sees a lot of the things that happen that lead to the expulsion of the Jews. And it starts when she's 7, and it ends when she's 16, when they are expelled. And I feel, and I started to feel as I was writing it, that I was writing my ancestor. This was a very terrible thing that happened. So it's a three hanky book. If you don't like the sad book, it's not for you. It's my really only three hanky book. It's not all sad, but there's a lot of sadness in it.
Does it have a title yet?
My editor hates my title. So the title, my main character is Seema. I called it Long Ago Seema, and she hated it. So if you think of a title, let me know. I've proposed some, and I'm waiting to hear. Yes? Well, it depends on the book. So, I wrote, does anybody know my Princess Tales? Mm-hmm. Yes. So, the first one, The Fairy's Mistake, was based on a picture book that was one of those rejected books that nobody would take. And then, when Ella was published, my editor asked me to expand it into a chapter book and write 2 more, and then she asked me to write 3 more after that. But when I wrote that and expanded it into a chapter book, that took 8 days. So that is my record. That is the shortest. And the longest, my mystery, Stolen Magic, took me 4.5 years. I was lost, I was miserable, I didn't know what I was doing, I didn't know how to find my way out of the story, and I eventually got it. But it's not the same story I started with. I got so lost. I think average 1.5 to 2. Do you have a follow-up question?
It was about the...
Hang on. Yes.
Okay,
well, I asked. What inspired me to start writing is all the books I read as a kid. I loved to read. I was the kind of book kid who walked down the street reading and fell off the curb. And I shared a bedroom with my sister. Does anybody here share a bedroom with a sibling? If you do, how many of you think you have enough privacy? Okay, well, I didn't. And if you feel you have enough privacy, that means that your sister is wonderful and you're a wonderful sister. My sister hated me, and I would read, because a book is the most private place in the universe. And I would read in the bathroom. And that was a problem for everybody else because we had one. But how many of you, when you read a book, read and you like it, reread it? Okay, I think not all writers do that, but if you do, the language tends to get inside you and become part. paid for them to get released. And my character witnesses before Malaga, I'm going to give you all 9 years. Before Malaga fell, there was a siege, and they had very little to eat. So these people were starving. My main character sees all these starving people and feels terrible about what's going to happen to them. And is happy that the Jews at least will be free once their ransom is paid. But, and the book doesn't go into this much, but in actual history, it took 4 years to get all the money together. So they were kind of in prison. They were fed, but they were in prison for 4 years, and they probably were not that different from slaves. They probably had to work. So that's an example of bad things. At the very beginning of the book, the town, that the city that they live in, is hit with the plague. What's the plague? Yes.
It was the sickness that was carried from Asia by rats to Europe.
Excellent. That is an excellent answer. Although I read a recent article in National Geographic that put forth the theory that that plague, the medieval plague, was not carried. What you just said is what's mostly believed, so your information is very good. But the reason that I'm saying that, and it's important, is because right at the beginning of the book, plague strikes this town, and my main character is very sick, but she recovers, and her family's hit. But interestingly, Jews got plague less than Christians. Does anybody want to guess why that might have been the case? What do you think?
Maybe they're from somewhere, like they came from somewhere, and they had a little bit more.
That's a really interesting idea. I'm not sure that would be true, but that's very scientific. Yeah. Another guess, yeah. Stronger immune system, because they had such miserable lives. That's great. Okay, what do you think? Another example that happens at the beginning of the book. We see that. Night is one of my favorites of my books that I've written. Writing Magic, which is my book for kids about writing, is another favorite. Writer to Writer is the second book about writing for kids. And I like it a lot. But Writing Magic, because it's the one I wrote first. My book Lost Kingdom of Bamar, which is the prequel to Two Princes of Bamar, I love. And the new book. And the new book, I had to learn so much about, I didn't know any of this. What I just told you 3 years ago, I didn't know. I had to learn so much that I'm really proud of writing that book. So that's another favorite. Yes. Yeah, it's a bittersweet ending. And a girl wrote to me, so upset. She wrote to me that I had to write a sequel and fix it. Or I had to go back and I had to change it. There had to be a revised edition with a different ending. So, and you know, there's sadness in a lot of my books. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And in Writing Magic, one of the things I say is that a writer's job is to make his or her character suffer. And the reason is we want our readers to suffer. Why do we want our readers to suffer? Yes. They'll be happy at the end, yes. And why else is good to make the reader suffer? Yes. Spain was probably made for writers. I saw, yes.
Wait. So I had a question. You mentioned before that your editor hated the title, so I just wanted to ask a little bit about what it's like to work with an editor, someone who's telling you the things they like or don't like about your work, how you take that feedback, and what do you do with it? Because I know a lot of kids are working on their writing in school, and their teachers might give them feedback, so how do you manage working with an editor?
Well, I love my editor. And our goals are to have the best book possible. So I take her edits very seriously. Mm-hmm. Often, my first response is, can I do this? Sometimes I disagree. And when I disagree, it's up to me, it's my book. Which is different from being in school, having a teacher where you have to do it. But it's my book, and when a reviewer doesn't like something, I can't say, well, the editor made me do it. It's my book. My book, Stolen Magic, the one that took 32 years, 4.5 years to write, my editor wrote me a 32-page, single-spaced editorial letter about everything that was wrong with that book. And one of her lines, which made me cry, was, how on earth do you expect the reader to understand da-da-da, whatever it was? For that one, I called her up and said, "Look, that really hurt me." But I went through and I go through and I love to revise. Mm-hmm. So that I love to revise is one of the charming aspects of it. And I also love, at that point, it becomes a conversation between me and the editor. And I love that. And also when the editor, and if you were to come to my workshop in Brewster, you'll have that experience. And you had it a little bit tonight. And when you show work, and when somebody looks at your work and gives you a response, you are getting attention in a very fulfilling way. It's very complete. I do my best to really get inside what a student is writing. And I think, and that's a kind of gratification that I get working with an editor. And she sends me an editorial letter and she marks up a manuscript. Mm-hmm. Not every editor works that way. Some editors will talk to the writer. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I want to see on the page where the problem is. An editor, not my current editor, an editor once told me my character wasn't like, my main character wasn't likable. And I didn't understand. And I needed her to go into the manuscript to show me the moments when she wasn't likable so I could see it and I could fix it. And when she did that, I did see it and I was able to know what was going on. I've had problems with likability more than once. But I did bring this, I might as well show you something. Come on up. What's going on? I brought a Ogre Enchanted copy edited. And this is what it looks like. That's not a good example. Let's find a better example. This is the copy editor, which is different from my editor. Does anybody know what a copy editor does? Copy editor, yes. What do you think?
Is it someone who works more on the publishing side, not publishing, works with the publisher?
The copy editor, both my editor and the copy editor work for the publisher. The copy editor is the person who's, my editor is, she does some copy editing too, but she looks at the big picture and will tell me, like on the expulsion book, she's already told me that I have to trim a lot from the first 200 pages. It's a very long book, and I sent it to her after I trimmed 150 pages already. But she said the first 200 have to move faster. So she'll tell me big stuff like that. The copy editor is gonna make sure that the time works right, that if I say something happened in 1488, and then I say a year went by, and then I say it's 1490, she's gonna notice, no, there's a discrepancy there. It's like the nitty gritty, or may change punctuation, may disagree with me that usage, which is how a word is used, which I have arguments about all the time, because I love English usage, and I'm usually right. But that's what it looks like. It's a Word document, they write comments, I respond, I fix, I change, and we go back and forth. And we go back and forth a few times before, with my editor, we go back and forth, depending on the kind of shape the book is in when she gets it, maybe 3 or 4 times. And then with the copy editor, maybe twice. And then things move along. And then I start to see it in galleys when it's got the typeface, when it looks like it's going to appear on the page. And then it's published. And I read it to children and I see things that I wish I could change. Always. Yes.
When it took the 9 years for you to be published, how did you kind of persevere through that and keep going? So I imagine a lot of writers starting out have that same experience.
Yeah, except the ones we came to get published right out of the gate. Actually, that was one of the happiest times of my life. I joined the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. I started going to conferences. I joined critique groups. I was in this class that Cherry and I were in together. And there was, we were all in the same boat. We were all getting rejected all the time. And so I was making friends, which was one of the joys of life, and feeling a lot of support. I mean, at one point, near the end of the 9 years, it dawned on me that if I had set out to be a brain surgeon, I would have been one. And then I met a doctor who was giving up his practice to try to be a children's book writer. And I thought, oh, but I love learning the skill. I love revising. I love getting better at it. So it was all that was very supportive that got me through. I wasn't in a gallery just sending out stuff and getting rejected. Yes?
I'm curious what your process is day to day. Where do you write and what time of day and what's your environment when you write?
I write in the kitchen, standing up because I've read that standing is more healthy than sitting. And also because I pulled my hamstring a few years ago, so I sit for a long time, it hurts. The dog scratches at the door, I let the dog in. I give the dog a biscuit to go out with again. But what I do, and I start working in the morning, I get sleepy after lunch, I'm not so good right after lunch. Later in the day, I get back into it. I set myself a goal of at least 2.25 hours a day. And I write down, I started at 8:13. If I go to the bathroom, I write down that I stopped writing at 8:28. And then when I come back, I say 8:32. And I keep a running total. And I am incapable of ignoring an email, so if an email comes in, I write when I stop, I look at the email, I may respond to it, I go back, I write the time. It's very broken up, and yet I'm able to do that. I can't do two things at once, but I can do one very choppily. I write anywhere. I can write on the train, I can write in an airport, I take my laptop with me. I don't need the moon to be in a certain position. I don't need dead silence. So that's how I do it. Yes?
Just curious, how did the success of your book and then Ella Enchanted and then turning it into a movie, how did that change your career and your life?
Well, it was the Newbery Honor that really changed. And it made it's the reason you're all here, that it's hard to get to be known. And if a book doesn't get a lot of word of mouth, it doesn't, there are things that happen to books that get them readers. Because your first book, for all of you future writers, will appear in the bookstore for a very brief period. And if something doesn't happen, it will sink into oblivion. And then if you're lucky, you'll write another book, and you may start to very slowly get readers. But if something, I got very lucky. And I say I got very lucky because, yes, I wrote a good book, but I got lucky because there are a lot of good books. And this particular Newbery Committee, that these particular members like mine. So the Newbery honor, and that made it possible for me to have a life as a writer, for which I am, you know, endlessly grateful and feel, you know, like I frequently have to pinch myself, and it's 20 years later and it's still true. Oh, I wouldn't have had a talking snake and an evil uncle. That's what I would have changed right off the bat. But I'm very glad the movie was made because it continues to bring readers to the book. And I like the movie, it's fun. And my husband and I got to go to Ireland and watch a couple of days of the shooting, which was fascinating, and see that there was a parking lot full of cars, and there was really only me who wrote the book in with one car. And I got to meet Anne Hathaway, and I'll show you a picture. But before I do, I have to warn you, they are very, 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 is it coming up? Yes, tall. So I'm glad, and I think it's a fun movie, and I think Anne Hathaway was a fabulous Ella. So that's what I think, yes? So you think? You do too? Yes.
Is the acting like in
your eye? Yeah, she's pretty close. Char, would I make dark skin? But Anne does look a lot like what I'm getting. Okay, one more question if there is one. Going.